September 7th, 2025 is designated as National Grandparents Day in the United States. My wife and I have 21 grandchildren, and we aren't quite sure if there's going to be any more. Those aren't our decisions. And they range from age 26 to age 1. As of last week, the youngest turned a year old. None of the grandkids live anywhere near us. They are scattered out. They're hundreds and even thousands of miles away from coast to coast. They used to be in three countries. Now we're down to two countries, but they are all far away. And until the COVID travel restrictions in 2020, we were managed to see all of the grandchildren every year. You know, I have fond memories of growing up on the farm in Minnesota with my German grandfather. And he and grandmother moved to a house in town when my parents got married and took over the family farm. But Grandpa came out to the farm and he worked every day as normal. He would show up at 8 o'clock in the morning, just like clockwork, and he would go home at 5 in the afternoon and go home for supper. Now, my grandmother, she did her support of the farm operation. She mended all of our clothes, my dad's, and you can imagine the clothes wear and tear on four rambunctious boys. She was busy. She would come out and help butcher chickens and so forth. My grandparents had three children. Each of them had four children. So they had 12 grandchildren for which they were well acquainted and doted on. And there's lots of stories that you probably have about experiences about our grandparents. And it was some years ago I did the sermonette entitled The Day Grandpa Ran Down the Roof. I remember that day because I was, 12 or 13 years old. Never forget the experience. But so we all have those little anecdotes or experiences, family situations. Well, the title of today's message is, What Are We Leaving Our Grandchildren? Or What Are We Leaving to Our Grandchildren? Well, the message is about our grandchildren, means both physical and spiritual grandchildren. And we're going to look at these themes on how grandchildren are viewed in the Bible and how we're instructed to treat our own grandchildren. And the themes are honor, responsibility, and inheritance. And they'll be blended throughout the message. Some years ago, I was driving through Bend, Oregon. Some of you may have been there. It's high desert country in central Oregon. And there was a battered old car, an old station wagon, had a bumper sticker on it. I won't forget it. Great big bumper sticker, and it said, Grandchildren are so wonderful, I only wish we had them first. You can see it. I wasn't a grandfather at the time. That was probably 40 years ago, and so I didn't understand what they were talking about, because parents have a tough job just raising kids as it is, and they don't always think about it. In any day and age, it's a challenge. And so by the time grandchildren come on the scene, the children are now on their own, and the grandparents, without the pressure, can start building a relationship with the grandchildren. Well, let's take a look at how God views family and children in particular. But of course, without our own children, we wouldn't have grandchildren. I want to start with Psalm 127. In Psalm 127, and I want to take a look, and I'm going to do this, read this one in the English Standard Version, the ESV. Psalm 127, starting in verse 3 through 5. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gates. Let's dissect that for a moment. When it says they shall not be put to shame, he was when he speaks with his enemies in the gate, adversaries. His children aren't going to embarrass him. In the gates means where the community decisions are made, whether it's the courts or the government. In other words, he can be proud of his children. His children can be proud of him. If we're in Psalms, let's take Psalms 128. Starting in verse 1, but going 1 through 6, also in the English Standard Version, in Psalm 128. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Now, we've talked about olives and olive trees before, and from the roots, little sprouts will spring up and grow out of the roots as an olive tree will reproduce or spring from the roots. And that's sort of like a family around the table. That's a really quite remarkable analogy. But let's continue on with the verses in Psalm 128. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. And then finally, verse 6. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Now note this comment. May you see your children's children. Not everybody has that opportunity. Some people don't make it there at that point. Now, I grew up next door to a farm family. The mom in that family was my dad's cousin, grew up next door, so they were our second cousins. There were four boys in that family and four boys in ours. And so it seems like almost every family in the neighborhood had four boys, and there were hardly any girls. Girls were those strange, wondrous creatures off somewhere we didn't know too much about. Well, so we had a lot of softball games in the summer, football in the fall, and in the winter, when we got hay out of the barn enough, we could have basketball games in the hay barn, indoor basketball, all in our neighborhood. Well, the neighbor with the four boys, my dad's cousin, they never had any grandchildren. The four boys got up, grew up. The oldest one got married in middle age, but didn't have any children of his own. And so the older neighbor was just bereft. He didn't have that opportunity to have his children's children. Well, when I visited Minnesota, I would take my children over there, and he would cuddle them up like they were his own because they were relatives, and he would put them in the lap, and that was as close as he was going to get. So I never thought about that, you know, until later. In Psalm 128, we just read, when we see the mention of grandchildren, your children's children, just to have that is a blessing and a joy to see. Well, the two Psalms, 127 and 128, are the depiction of an ideal family situation. But many people get sidetracked along life's path. So I want you to think of it in this way. We're all grandchildren of at least four grandparents. So rather than look ahead generation, let's look back a little bit. Now, some of us already have grandchildren. Some will have grandchildren someday. Everybody watching or listening is already a grandchild. But even if you don't have physical grandchildren, or the grandchildren are far removed, we can serve as spiritual grandparents for others' children and grandchildren and care for those as we love those grandkids as our own. Well, this family relationship is a generational ideal that God has given us as a model of his relationship to his children. And the responsibilities we face as grandparents can yield great blessings. Let's turn to Exodus 20 and verse 12. In Exodus 20 and verse 12, and I suspect everyone in this room has read this verse before, because it says in Exodus 20, 12, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. That verse is mirrored in Deuteronomy 5, verse 16. It's the fifth commandment. The apostle Paul wrote a letter to the church at Ephesus, and he reiterated this commandment and gave further explanation in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1 and 2. Ephesians 6, 1 and 2. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Well, that is the same message we're reading in Exodus 20 about that your days may be long in the land which the Lord gives you. In other words, it's healthy for long life. Now, the depiction in Ephesians 5 of the marriage model is how we as the church become the bride of Christ. And then in the next chapter in Ephesians 6, we read, and it goes on to mention the points of today's sermon of honor, responsibility, and inheritance. It said that a measure of a society's civilization is how well they treat the weakest members of that society. And I want to take a look at Japan because it's a cultural tradition that the elderly and the parents in particular are greatly honored. And it's interesting that the people who live in Japan, statistically, now we know, have the longest lifespans of any country on earth. And according to InfoPlease.com, which is an online encyclopedia, on average, a person lives 5 years longer than the average in the United States. The commandment to honor father and mother is like the law of gravity. It's the commandment that offers a physical blessing in this life. If we take a look at Malachi chapter 1, and starting in verse 6, in Malachi 1 and verse 6, a son honors his father and a servant his master. In other words, there's a level of respect and honor that is due there, but the discussion continues. If then I am a father, where is my honor? If I'm a master, where is my fear or awe? Said the Lord of hosts. To you, O priests who despise my name, but then you say, how have we despised your name? And it goes on to explain, well, if they don't do what God says, are they honoring God? And they weren't doing what God said. They weren't doing how he said and what he said. So God has expectations of us, just as he was describing there, a son honoring his father, a servant his master, and he was getting after the priests for not doing what God expected them to do. Now, the rest of chapter in Malachi is an explanation of how the priests and the people of Israel were not honoring God. They weren't giving God their best. The offerings that were giving to God were not be acceptable under local secular rulers. Somehow, some people have a hard time giving their best to God. Well, how do we treat our earthly parents and grandparents? How good of a child and grandchild are we? In Leviticus 19 and verse 32, in Leviticus 19, 32, we read, you shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God. I am the Lord. To honor the gray-headed, as it will say in some translations, the hoary head or the white hair, we read this also in Proverbs 16, 31. And I'll read this one in the English Revised Version of Proverbs 16, 31. Gray hair is a crown of glory on people who have lived good lives. It's earned by living right. Oh, we stop and think about that. Not everybody lives long enough to get gray hair. Make foolish decisions. Or what does they say? Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. You know, bad things happen when people make bad decisions. Now, one of my younger brothers mentioned, and I may have mentioned before, he said, with age comes wisdom. Then he lowered his voice and said, but sometimes age comes alone. In other words, not everybody picks up age over wisdom over time. Well, some years ago, before my brothers and I turned gray, and I noticed my older brother, his hair was sprinkled with gray. He was getting gray on the temples. And, well, nowadays you couldn't tell. We're all pretty well sprinkled with gray. And I called attention. You know, it looks like you're graying around the edges. And he goes, I'm finally getting the respect to which I've long been entitled. In other words, he was embracing the silver or gray hair. Well, my parents had 4 boys in 5 years. And in retrospect, raising children of my own, now mine were spread at 4 years, 5 years, 3 years. I couldn't imagine having 4 boys in 5 years. The struggles that my parents had to have been enormous, but I didn't know that because I was just a kid. We were all kids. We were just doing what kids do. We didn't think about adult thoughts. So we were oblivious to the trials of our parents that we just simply didn't know. And it's only now, as we reach the grandparenting stage, and we become fully aware and reflect and realize the struggles that our parents had when we were the young children tormenting them as we were growing up. Now, After all of us, my brothers and I, became adults, my city-living uncle brought his son out, my much younger cousin, who was a high school student, out to the farm to live with my parents. My uncle was an airline pilot, gone for 10 days at a time. His kid was growing up basically feral. Dad was gone a lot, and he was getting into a lot of trouble, difficult to raise. And so my uncle, his big idea was bring the kid out to the farm. His sister's kids are all grown up. They could use an extra farm helper, and here's a high school kid. It's better than jail. So we'll take him out to the farm. Well, my cousin had gotten into all kinds of trouble. He had scrapes with the law. He had wrecked cars. He was busted for pot smoking and hooliganism in general. And I can say, thankfully, my cousin has outgrown that foolish behavior of his youth. But at the time, my dad explained to my uncle, and my dad, he said, I've raised four boys, and I've raised them all to adulthood. And never once did the deputy sheriff come up the driveway to the farm looking for my boys. But he said in the first 4 months that my cousin was there, deputies from four counties were coming up the driveway looking for that boy trying to track him down. And then my cousin, a few years ago, we went to a family funeral. And of course, he's muchly matured, has his own business, and is thriving. And he told me, do you have any idea how life is so difficult for a 14-year-old brain living in a 58-year-old body? In other words, life was hard, but he had to learn things the hard way because he didn't learn things early as he could have. Well, a son who frequently gets into trouble is not honoring his father. Just like honoring God as our spiritual father has its rewards, so does honoring our physical father have its rewards. King David discovered that it had its rewards when his mind and heart were focused on God. When we read Psalm 132, we'll look to that, Psalm 132 in verse 11. And the psalm explains how King David was to prepare a temple as a focal worship point to honor God. And then we drop down to verse 11. And God made a promise to David that he wouldn't go back on his word. And he said, I will place one of your descendants on the throne. Well, this was a promise to King David that his sons and grandsons and generations to come would be on the throne of David. Well, this brings to mind our actions and our thoughts before God are to be exemplary, above reproach. God would think so well of us that he would extend his promises to our grandchildren and beyond. But unlike those grandparents who had a bumper sticker on their car about how they wish they had their grandchildren first, we're obliged to raise our own children, and then we can fully appreciate the grandchildren as and when they come along. Can you imagine how frustrated God has been with us, his children, from time to time, and how much God appreciates it when we, and then our grandchildren, come along and then follow in positive footsteps? Meantime, we have a special responsibility to raise our children as we might have someday the opportunity to have grandchildren. Let's take a look now, another look at Ephesians 6, and this time in verse 4. In Ephesians 6 and verse 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. There's a responsibility that to train our children up, to raise them up in a responsible manner. Now, the verse here, Ephesians 4, 6, is written in what we call the manner of opposites, that if you don't do something, raise them up in the admonition and training of the Lord, then the fathers who have that enormous responsibility, by their inaction, their children will be angry. Well, nature abhors a vacuum, so the spiritually neglected child will absorb influences from the world, influences that will lead to problems in the child's life, as it did with my cousin. Growing up without dad being around much, he's always off in Tokyo or Hong Kong or wherever across the world, did not have that constant positive influence. My parents straightened that out, I think. It took him a few years, but he got through high school. In Proverbs 22, verse 24, a child left to their own becomes angry. Proverbs 22, verse 24, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go. In other words, don't get involved with angry people. It's unhealthy. A few chapters later in Proverbs, and we look at Proverbs 29, verse 22, we can read about the characteristics of an angry man. Proverbs 29, verse 22, an angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. Well, instead of the word transgression, you can just substitute it for the word sin. So you got to be careful. People who are angry are prone to sin. So it's an important responsibility to raise our children in the care and nurture of the Lord. And I can tell you story after story how angry people grow up, and then they have children of their own. And then as new parents, they're still angry at their parents, so they block the grandchildren or the grandchildren from having a relationship with their grandparents. And the cycle goes on and on. As we look around the world, we see a lot of angry, self-centered people. They're constantly in conflict with each other. And if we can take a look at Matthew 5:22, Christ is laying out and expanding our understanding in Matthew 5:22. But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. Now, it doesn't say don't ever be angry. Jesus was angry when they polluted the temple, overturned the tables, drove the livestock out because they were disrespecting God. But without a cause, meaning a just cause, danger of the judgment. Well, what do they mean, danger of the judgment? Basically, if you could cut to the chase, it means not entering the kingdom of God as decided at judgment day. Well, when we read Ephesians 6:4 about bringing our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, we can deduce that angry people at war, they're always at war. They weren't brought up with the training and admonition of God. Jesus Christ was challenged by the Pharisees regarding the keeping of the Sabbath. And the Pharisees, you see, were angry at Jesus the Christ. And they tried numerous times to trip him up. Let's turn to John 5 and verse 23. And John 5, 23. And the Christ spoke to them that we should all honor the Son just as they honored the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. He's speaking about God the Father and Jesus Christ. In other words, the honor should be extended to the Son. When they do that, they're also honoring God the Father. Well, we can go back to the fifth commandment we read in Exodus 20. Honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land which the Lord gives you. So by honoring Jesus the Christ, they would be honoring God the Father as well. And that sets out a principle. Honoring physical parents is akin to honoring God the Father and the church as our mother. Not only will our physical lives be extended when we honor our physical parents, but we have hope of the spiritual promise to live in God's millennial kingdom when we honor God the Father. I may have mentioned before, in the 1880s, a fellow by the name of Lars Omdal, who lived near Stavanger, Norway. He had six children. And this was, 140 years ago? And the children were ages 22, 20, 18, 16, and 14. And then, oops, two. And sometimes those families have a little extra one that comes along at the end. And so he had boys, age 22 and 20 and two. The other ones, 16, 14, or 18, 16, 14, were the three girls. Well, the two eldest sons, they looked around in Norway, mountains, and fjords, and not a lot of farmland. Said, there's not a lot of opportunity for us here, and a lot of kids in the family. So they set sail for America. 20 and 22, go seek adventure. And they set sail, and they were going to check it out. And they got to America, and they sent back a letter to the parents. And they said, we're not coming back. We found opportunity here in America. And that was their future. Well, Lars Omdal had married later in life. He was 58 years old when his sons were 22, 20, and 2. And so his daughters, 18, 16, and 14, were unmarried. And so Lars Amdahl and his wife had their 2-year-old toddler, and the future of splitting up his family, had the map had been laid out for him, he would never see his grandchildren unless he took action. Because they went off to America, his daughters were not yet married, so Lars Amdahl made a bold decision to gather everything he owned in this life, and he sold it, including the family homestead near Stavanger, Norway. And he moved the entire family by steamship to America, as pioneers would say, lock, stock, and barrel. Lars was determined to keep his family together to the extent possible. He was determined to see his children's children in his later years. And I suppose this was particularly on his mind because he was an older than average father, and he realized he may not live to see all of his grandchildren be born, especially if they were in another country. Now, I know about this story because Lars Amdahl's oldest daughter, who was 18 at the time, is my great-grandmother. All of the story was reduced to writing and confirmed by the relatives. And I was fortunate to know his eldest daughter, Martha. She was my great-grandmother. And the family in America reproduced and spread. It included a Minnesota Supreme Court justice, the founder of a umpty million dollar company that builds medical devices called Medtronics. Also, now, if I walked in the door and said, I'm a relative, I don't suppose we'd get too far with that. It's been a few generations, but I'm related to all the Amdahls that are in that part of the world. But the determination of Lars Amdahl to keep his family together was one of the reasons then that his daughter, my great-grandmother and great-grandfather, raised my mother in her early years. They saw that family determination. It was the Depression. My mother was born in 31, and then in the depth of the Depression, a lot of people didn't have anything to eat. And so my mother was, in her early years, was raised by her Norwegian grandparents. And kept close to them and identified closely with them and her Norwegian heritage. According to Warren Farrell's book entitled Father and Child Reunion, about 25% of children in America today spend some time being raised by grandparents. And we're not talking about babysitters. 1/4 of American children are being raised for some period of their lives by grandparents. Not a surprise. I suspect that number has gone up in the last 50 years to reach that number. We see in Psalm 128, it was considered a blessing when you see your children's children. Now, if we read in Genesis 17, we read about the Abrahamic covenant and how God would bless the offspring of Abraham for Abraham's faithfulness to God. And if we read on through in Genesis 17, Abraham was 100 years old and his wife was 90. And he says, how in the world is this supposed to work out? This is, you know, it was not rational for that idea. But, you know, God said, no, it's going to be your and Sarah's son. And so they did have a son, a miraculous son named Isaac. But Isaac didn't marry early. He was 40 years old, and when his mother died, so she would have had to been, what, about 130, and his dad, Abraham, had to be about 140, so his dad sent his servant to get a wife for Isaac. He didn't want to die without the boy, without seeing his grandchildren, after all, right? So they arranged for Rebekah to become Isaac's wife, and later, then, Isaac and Rebekah would have twin sons, Esau and Jacob. And as we read through the Bible, Jacob was later renamed Israel. So when we think of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we think of those as the patriarchs of the Old Testament. So when somebody says the patriarchs, That's commonly referred to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, Jacob went on to have 12 sons and at least one daughter named Dinah. May have had others, it just isn't recorded for our benefit. And then Jacob's sons then included one named Judah and one named Joseph. And Joseph went on to have two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And Jacob, who was later named Israel, then on his deathbed, and we can read about this in Genesis 48, Genesis 48 and verse 16. We can read about this grandfather Jacob had his two grandsons brought to him. And he said, "Bless the lads, let my name be upon them and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." He was putting this blessing upon his grandchildren, indeed adopting them as his own, putting my name on them. Jacob was mindful of the destiny of his grandchildren. We can turn to Psalm 103. The whole chapter is about God's mercy and how he forgives sin. But I want to take a look in verses 15 and 16 in Psalm 103. And this is often referred to in funerals. In Psalm 103, starting in verse 15, "As for man, his days are like grass." How long does grass last? Just for the season, and then it turns brown and dies for the winter. "As a flower of the field, so he flourishes." How long does a flower last? It's temporary, just for a little while till the flower fades. Verse 16, "For the wind passes over it, and it's gone. Hot wind comes by, dries everything out, whether it's grass, flowers, or whatever plants. And its place remembers it no more." In other words, it's gone. Verse 17, "But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting to those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children, to such as keep his covenant, and to those who remember his commandment to do them." Sounds conditional for these future generations. There's a condition to this covenant, an agreement. They need to remember the commandments in order to keep the covenant that was offered and promised to Abraham. Now, as grandparents and even as grandchildren, we should remember the old saying, the best sermons are lived more than preached. An example that we set will set out for generations, as we read in Proverbs 17, in Proverbs 17, verse 6 in particular. In Proverbs 17 and verse 6, "Children's children," meaning grandchildren, "are the crown of old men, and the glory of children is their father." So it works both ways. If you're responsible and are keeping the commandments of God, those children are the crown. They're very proud of them. I have a grandson who graduated from high school this year, off to university this fall, made excellent grades. Dad's popping the buttons on his shirt on that one because he's doing well, And while we're in Proverbs, we can turn to 13:22. Proverbs 13:22, we're going to read about the glory of children. They want to, that everyone wants to be proud. Here in Proverbs 13:22, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children or grandchildren, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous." Now, not all of people are worldly wealthy. And just because it says the word wealth doesn't mean we have worldly wealth beyond measure as the world measures the wealth. Because our wealth can be measured in different ways. One of the best ways to measure wealth then is in Proverbs 22, verse 1, because we read that a good man leaves an inheritance to his children. But let's read Proverbs 22 and verse 1. In Proverbs 22, 1, "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver or gold." So if you want to leave something to your children, the Bible suggests you leave a good name. The most important characteristic or inheritance that we can give our grandchildren is our name. That's what Jacob did. Our good name comes from our willingness to follow the example of Jesus the Christ and believe and do what Christ taught. Well, the coming kingdom of God is our inheritance in Galatians 3, in verses 28 and 29. In Galatians 3, 28, 29, discusses whether or not you have to be a blood descendant of Abraham in order to get the Abrahamic blessings. In Galatians 3, starting in verse 28, there is neither Jew nor Greek. There's neither slave nor free. There's neither male nor female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Your belief and understanding and your action upon that belief, were you following it up with doing following God's commandments and keeping your terms of the covenant, will allow you to do what we read in Genesis, back in Genesis 12, Genesis 17. You qualify then to inherit the Abrahamic covenant through God's forgiveness, His mercy, and our extreme efforts to do what God wants. We're all heirs according to the promise, according to 1 Kings 8:53. And 1 Kings 8:53. And it's a time when Moses was brought the fathers out of Egypt. And it was a time when God wanted to lead people one way and people had a chance, but then they wanted to do their own thing. But he wanted them to lead by example. So it was the next generation that actually made it to the promised land. And he's asking each of us to lead the way now to be the best example we can be. In Psalm 2 and verse 8, God says, ask of me and I will give you the nations for your inheritance and the ends of the earth for your possession. Doesn't that sound kind of wild? Did you ever dream that you wanted the ends of the earth for your possession? That's an awful lot. There's a lot of stuff on earth. It's for, when I was a kid, I wasn't complicated. I just wanted a jackknife, something simple. Couldn't afford it, didn't have any money. But, I thought it was so good. I could get one of those ivory-handled jackknives and it would fold. Or if I got a Swiss Army knife, wow, that would be the cat's meow. I mean, that would just be beyond belief. And I'm thinking, so to read something about inheriting huge, huge things is mind-blown. I couldn't even envision that. So it's hard to imagine what our pioneer ancestors thought when they were coming, in our cases, coming to America. And the first thought they thought, the early settlers in America went to Jamestown, and they thought, well, there's gold in Africa, and people got rich there. We'll go look for gold. Didn't find any gold in Virginia. They were out there digging in the mud instead of planting crops, raising livestock, and surviving. And then they had what was called the starving time because they weren't doing important stuff like eating and raising stuff that they could eat. And so that's now known in the history books as the starving time. In Psalm 37 and verse 11, there's a huge inheritance that's coming to the people under the Abrahamic covenant. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and they shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. Doesn't that sound good? The abundance of peace? With all the conflict that we see in every direction, delighting in the abundance of peace is like drinking your favorite cold beverage on a hot day. It's just so, so nice. Now, you may notice when you came here today, did you see any soldiers standing on the street corner? I didn't have to dodge any gunfire to come here today. I didn't have to worry about artillery shells landing somewhere around and shrapnel hitting everywhere. I didn't have to worry about gangs or thugs stopping the car like they do in some countries, such as Jamaica. And then they stop your car, strip the wheels and tires off, and leave the rest of it there because they needed the wheels and tires worse than you did, or so they thought. Just crazy things all over the world where they don't have peace. We have peace generally. And when we peace, we can't say that people have in other parts of the world or even other parts of the country, because you will also notice there isn't a lot of meekness like it refers to in Psalm 37. But let's take a look at Matthew 5:5, because what did we read in the Beatitudes in Matthew 5:5? We're reading, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." This is reinforcing what we had heard earlier about the inheritance of people following the Abrahamic covenant and having peace, the meekness inheriting the earth. So that inheritance that will be ours, we can give our grandchildren physical blessings that we can share, and that's nice. But as we read in Psalm 22, a good name is better than riches. And if we're not as rich as this world, as this world counts riches, we can follow God and give our children a good name. And our meekness is a way of following God's way. Now, no matter what way we're going, what we do, our grandchildren will remember us as the grandparents. My dad told me about his grandpa, my great-grandfather. Actually, the neighbor first told me about my great-grandpa. I didn't know him. He had died before I was born. It was over 100 years ago. And he had horses, and he pulled equipment on the farm, down the field and then back, down the field and then back all day, working the horses on a hot summer day. But when he got to the end of the field, in Minnesota, there's what we call a pothole or a slough on each end of the field, and they farm between the sloughs. And there was one horse that just kept right on walking at the end of the field, went right into the slough and just settled into the water and the mud and enjoyed itself. In the harness, everything. And my great-grandfather would have to urge the horse to stand up. And to do so, he would give him the boot in the rump and get the horse back up. He would march to the other end of the field, and the horse would walk into the next slough and lie down in there and ooze into the mud. Of course, if you put mud on a horse, it's not going to get bit by flies or mosquitoes, too. So not entirely blaming the horse for it. So he was willing to take the kicks in order to get up and go to work. But what the neighbor, the reason I found out about it is when something wasn't working and an old neighbor was by and we were doing some project together, and the old neighbor says, "Give it the old number 13. I didn't know what the old number 13 was. Well, he explained to me that my great-grandfather had two different size feet. The left foot was a 12 and the right foot was a 13. And when the horse would lie down in the mud, other people would be driving by on the road in their horse and buggy, and there would be my great-grandfather giving the old number 13 to the horse that would lie down at every end of the field. Well, apparently this became a whole neighborhood expression. When things needed to be fixed, you had to force it. You gave it the old number 13. Well, I went back and asked my dad, and he knew his grandpa. He confirmed it. The old number 13 was, in fact, urging things to get fixed or to get right. Well, that was his legacy. He has other parts of the legacy as well that I may tell at another time. But I never met that great-grandfather, but I know this story about him and a few other ones, that he left an example that was felt far and wide by many people. That was my dad's grandfather, my grandmother's, and that's his father's father, my dad's mother's father. He was 14 when he came from West Prussia. It was in the late 1800s. Now, it's illegal to leave the country unless you were at least 21 years old and you had already done your military service. But his older brothers had been in the military, Prussian army, and they had expanded out. They had conquered Poland. They were over into Ukraine. And a very large area that they had conquered. And they said, "Don't go in the army. It's terrible. You stand a chance to die or get maimed. So here, take one of our ID, pretend that you're 21 and go to America and get away." So my great-grandfather did. At age 14, he had enough face hair to grow a beard, fake like he was an older brother, like his older brother, and came to America. Got a job, worked, brought his one at a time, brought a brother over. They both worked, brought the second brother, the next brother over. They worked and brought the sisters over. They all worked and brought the parents over. Go to a little cemetery now in Hutchinson, Minnesota, on the north side of Campbell Lake. There's a little cemetery there, and it has birth 1843 of the parents that they brought over from what was then West Prussia, which is now called Germany. They honored their parents by bringing them all together so the parents could see all of the grandchildren all together. And so those parents didn't just lose their children. They were honored by their children to bring them along. In 1 Corinthians 3:11, the Apostle Paul is telling about putting our foundation on Jesus Christ. And we read that verse in 1 Corinthians 3:11 because that foundation which is laid is Christ Jesus. There is no other foundation that will work. And it goes on to explain that if you make it out of gold or silver or precious stones or wood, hay, or stubble, it's all going to come out in the end. It'll all be revealed by fire. And only the things that are responsible, when we're keeping our end of the covenant of the Abrahamic bargain. If you recall what Moses did when he found the Israelites making a golden calf, pretending to worship God, but not doing what God said. What did he do? He reduced it to ashes and they got to drink it. Forcing it down. So all the things that will go away that mankind is invests in, whether it's gold, silver, or wood, hay, or straw, it's only our example and our name will remain. So as we approach the National Grandparents Day, let's bring to mind God's expectations of us that as we look to the future through our grandchildren, and we owe our actual and our spiritual grandchildren the understanding of honor, responsibility, and inheritance, so we can always easily answer the question, what are we leaving to our grandchildren?